Tennessee just sounds perfect.
Whether that's live music, the crack of a campfire, or kids laughing on an adventure.
To start planning your trip, visit tnvacation.com.
Tennessee sounds perfect.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio.
Welcome back to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you, as always, so much for tuning in. Let's give it up for our one and only super producer, Mr. Max Williams. They call me Ben, depending on where I'm traveling at the time. I've been known to use some personas. And Noel, I think you love traveling as well.
Yeah, and maybe not so much under pseudonyms, but maybe I'll take a cue from you, sir, and go down that road. What is one of yours? Astronaut with a Secret? Is that one of them? Did I make that up?
Oh, Max Powers, Astronaut yes. with a Secret. Yes. see, Max, you're getting it. You're intrigued already, right?
What?
Yeah, I got away with it too. And then the eye patch situation, right? Mm-hmm. Remember that one?
Of course, yeah. How could I forget?
So the point is that, you know, we're all big fans of travel here at Ridiculous History. And, you know, before we hopped on air, super producer Max Williams and I were talking a little bit about his possible summer vacation plans. You just got back from a lovely trip in Berlin, Noel. And we have traveled often for work, but we also love to travel just for funsies, for personal enrichment, to see the world. And that's something that is relatively new in the story of human history, right?
Yeah. I mean, do you remember there had to have been a time where even just the phrase "see the world" was an enticing tagline for a brand new industry, a whole new world of leisure travel. Because as we've talked about many times throughout the course of the show, depending on what era you're discussing, I mean, travel was not a luxurious thing at all, and it was really only reserved for the super wealthy who had a damn good reason for traveling a certain distance. Otherwise, it could be met with incredible hardships if you were doing it on foot or by horse during, you know, through rough terrain and weather and all of that good stuff. I mean, you know, I mean, even the super wealthy had to travel in these like carriages or litters or whatever, and lots of opportunities for things to go wrong. You know, wheels could get damaged. They could be met with bandits, brigands on the highway and all that good stuff. But it wasn't until the 1800s, to late 1800s, that the idea of travel for funsies, as you say, Ben, really became a thing, really took off. And it was kind of by accident. It was one of those things where an industry sprang up entirely on its own as a result of somebody trying to do something completely different.
Yeah. Yeah, sort of like how the experiments of early alchemists led to what we understand as chemistry today.
Right.
It's fascinating. It is a really strange and relatively recent situation, as you described, Noel. Like back in the day, when people were traveling long distances, they were either super wealthy or something very bad had happened. They had been driven out of their home by war or famine. They weren't just off to check out, you know, the ruins of ancient Rome.
Or it could have been a diplomatic trip, something really necessary that required an in-person visit to deal with or treat with some other high-powered individual, right?
Right. Or a trade route. But in both of those cases we just mentioned, the odds were dangerously high that these people would run into some sort of disaster themselves. You know, being a diplomat didn't guarantee your safety in foreign lands the way that it theoretically does today. But here's what happened. The Industrial Revolution comes about, late 18th century England. People are moving from an agrarian lifestyle to cities. We see the emergence of a genuine middle class in Western Europe and the US. All of a sudden, a certain type of person had a little bit of scratch, and they wanted to see the world too. They wanted to, you know, maybe buy books. They wanted to have some of the finer things in life. They wanted to live like the royals. Shout out to Lord. So with an E. So like you said,
the Lord, you know, the Lord's the Lord of the dance, perhaps.
Perhaps. I played that character one time. It's very weird. Anyway, so this is where we meet our protagonist. And Noel, you set this up so beautifully. So there's a guy named Thomas Cook. And Thomas Cook is a religious figure. He's a pastor. He does not like the idea of people drinking booze. That's one of his main things. He's super against it. He's a teetotaler. And so he takes his message to the people. He's been doing this since the 1820s and 30s. He's walking on foot throughout England, throughout the countryside, talks to people. He says, don't drink, folks. And, you know, hold speeches impromptu, whatever. They'll listen to them. If they won't, then he's basically throwing pamphlets at them to read later.
Yeah. Who is it? I think it's Mitch Hedberg. I got this joke where it's like, every time someone hands me a flyer, it's like they're saying, hey, you throw this away.
Similar
with pamphlets. But this guy's basically like a Johnny Appleseed of finger wagging and pamphleting. You know, he's basically just distributing trash across everywhere he steps. And I'm sure that he converted some folks, you know, to his way of thinking that booze was the devil's nectar and all of that good stuff. But somewhere along the way, he realized that there was a very big opportunity for him in Egypt, because at this time, something called the Suez Canal was nearing completion and was going to was already causing a massive boom there in Egypt, in the capital city of Cairo, where hotel proprietors were, you know, making money hand over fist, and was really becoming a place that the super rich, you know, from Europe and even America wanted to check out because of the Egypt craze, right? The idea of like the pyramids and, you know, mummies and all of that stuff that really kind of, frankly, was somewhat disrespectful, if not entirely disrespectful, to the actual culture and religious practices of the Egyptian people. And it continued on throughout pop culture and history and movies like The Mummy and all of that. You even had the Three Stooges hanging out with the mummy. It really was kind of a weird bastardization of something that was very sacred and holy, but it was fascinating to Western minds, and it was really starting to become something that was attracting a lot of dollars.
Yeah, and he had been building to this for a while, because when he was just straight up walking, when he was the pamphlet-peddling, teetotaling pedestrian pastor, he wasn't really touching a lot of hearts and minds. It wasn't until the world's first railway network opened up that he realized he could take his message, he could expand his message, or as the Simpsons say, embiggen his message in a way he never had before. He would bring other temperance fans with him to rallies across the kingdom. And then telegraph wires came into play, and he was able to direct his temperist tours, he started to call them, from a remote location. And he realized quickly, this is what we're talking about, the accidental stuff. At first, he realized this mass transit would allow him to spread the message of teetotalery or teetotalerism, whichever you think is more fun to say, folks. At first, he thought, you know, this would be a good way to expand that. But then he realized he could make a buck with this. And so he put his missionary work on hold for just a second, he told himself, and started organizing sightseeing tours.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Mint Mobile.
If we've learned anything in the process of doing this podcast, just living life, it's that there's always a catch.
So when we heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month if you get a 3-month plan, we looked at each other and we thought, nah, what's the catch?
But here's the thing. In this case, there isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online.
Yeah, they cut out that middleman cost of retail stores and they pass those sweet, sweet savings directly to you. We're not joking. We have tried out Mint Mobile ourselves and it's super convenient. And it actually, like, we tried to find a catch and there's not one.
So to get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
That's mintmobile.com/ridiculous. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/ridiculous.
$45 upfront payment required, equivalent to $15 a month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan.
Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher, get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now. In 1855, he went over the English Channel to France, then took some folks to Switzerland. As soon as the American Civil War ended, he took some of the English middle class across the Atlantic to New York. And then he would crowdsource the expense. He became the world's first travel agent when he was saying, okay, if you travel together, I will be able to get you discounts and I'll cover all your travel and all your transit. And alcohol, this is where he starts to betray his old ideals. Alcohol isn't banned on these trips. It just comes at a really heavy additional cost. That's when he realizes the Suez Canal is the go-to place. People are nuts, like you said, about mummies. They're having mummy unwrapping parties. They're using them as cordwood or firewood. There are even people who are eating mummy ashes. It's wild, but everybody in Europe is all about mummies, especially when that French scholar deciphers the hieroglyphics on the Rosetta Stone. Cook cannot keep up with the demand. Mm-mm. Business is good.
Yeah, exactly. And he's really stumbled his way into a burgeoning new industry. The term, by the way, that I was trying to think of earlier was Egyptomania, which was a thing, like, you know, in the same way that like Beatlemania was a thing, or Listomania, if you know. Franz Liszt was like the original rock star with ladies throwing their lacy garments at him whilst he played the piano and all of that.
Shout out Phoenix.
Phoenix, one of my favorite bands. So this service that Cook was offering was pretty revolutionary. He essentially had these packages, these all-inclusive kind of deals that today seem super, super obvious because we've seen them a million times, sort of a proto-Carnival Cruise kind of situation. But at the time, it was something that nobody had ever really seen before, at least folks who were not seasoned travelers. And we're mainly dealing with Europeans at this point, of course. So he was not referring to himself as a travel guide per se, but as Andrew Humphreys wrote in his book On the Nile in the Golden Age of Travel, Cook referred to himself as a travel chaperone because this was a time where women were not meant to be out in the world on their own without the care of a proper chaperone. So that's the term that they were using because it kind of it gave an air of safety and upstandingness, right? I mean, he was definitely like still, you know, at heart a teetotaler, and he was still, I think, trying for that sort of influence. So I think maybe that affected his choice of terms there. But this allowed a lot of women, you know, in the same way that, remember, what was it, seaweed, gathering seaweed and making seaweed collages really opened up women to, seaweed like, the outdoors. Exactly. Because at the time, similar era, if I'm not mistaken, women, there were certain things they just weren't supposed to do because they were unladylike. So this allowed women to kind of venture out into the world. Again, I'm just describing the times. I think this is all absurd, obviously, and women should be able to do whatever they wanted. But it was a patriarchal society, so they had to go stepping stones at a time in order to get to a place where they could be fully able to do whatever they wanted. But Cook did, for what's worth, create a situation that allowed women to travel without fear of being, you know, molested by mashers or what have you.
And I just want to jump in and say something real quick. I love how much we like maligned the seaweed episode before we did it. We talked about how hard it was for us to actually make it. And I think that's like the most brought up episode we have in like all of our episodes now.
So far. And yes, that's a good point, Max. I would argue if you haven't listened to that episode yet, one of the really impressive things is how it allowed female identifying people entry into serious science, right? The misogyny was such at the time that they were not allowed to do so. But this also, I want to give a shout out to Peter Schwartzstein over at Smithsonian, who wrote the great article, How an Alcohol-Hating English Preacher Founded Global Tourism. And yes, I used the phrase pastor a couple times, but that was just me freestyling. He's a preacher. So look, there are some important points we got to hit here. First, this also kind of feeds into that middle class ambition to travel like a wealthy person. Now you have a chaperone, you have an entourage, a sort of valet, and they did enjoy these tours. He, being Cook, definitely was becoming more and more disassociated from his roots as he was pioneering this business. He wanted to embrace every new technology that would help him out with this. He founded a city, which we're going to get to in a second. This is one of the coolest parts of the story. He kind of founded / took over a city. He had also gotten into the monopolization or vertical horizontal integration game. He started renting cargo steamships. In the past, when very wealthy people were cruising the Nile, they were on sailing boats. So he got steamships. He subdivided them in these tiny little rooms, and he packed his passengers in like sardines in a can and took them on these three-week tours of various historic sites. And then other people saw that this was a good, I don't want to call it a grift. Other people saw this was a good business, right? And no one cared how disrespectful it was to actual Egyptian culture and people. So his American-German rivals hit the scene in 1880.
Yeah, he also, I mean, like, spread a lot of nasty rumors about Egyptians, like saying they were diseased and to, you know, not touch them or share your opera glasses with them unless you get a disease of the eye or something. I don't know. It's again, he wasn't respectful of the culture at all. And there was a lot of capitalizing on this idea of exoticism and all of these like bizarre magical rituals and dark magic and all of this stuff, because he really was kind of a grifter at heart, even if he started off with this intention of spreading the good word and preaching temperance and all that stuff far and wide. He really couldn't resist a good grift. He kind of reminds me of like, I'm deep in Better Call Saul rewatch and been watching the new episodes. And that's a trait. Slipping Jimmy, you know, he tries to be good. He tries to do good. But at the end of the day, he's always called back to the grift. He's addicted to the grift. And that's kind of what this guy is too. But he, you know, the idea of creating these like compartmentalizing, literally, they're called compartments, I think, or apartments, cabins, I guess, in these steamships, that was revolutionary. And it's something that we still see to this day. I think finally the cruise industry is maybe getting a little bit back up and running. Remember, were there all those like, there's moored cruise ships when COVID hit where they wouldn't let anybody off because everyone had COVID? And it was like, they had to sit there, you know, until they didn't even know what the incubation period was or how long it would be before they were safe. And they had to feed them through like slots in the door. It was just really a bad look for the industry. But not much has changed is all I'm getting at. Like they still are these massive ships that are divided into these tiny little compartments and everyone eats at the same time. It really is kind of like a brilliant business model that this dude Cook sort of haphazardly stumbled upon.
Yeah. And it's interesting because he was creating a lot of these innovations in response to competitors, right? So he didn't ever start out with this map of his grand plan to start the travel industry. When his rivals come on the scene, he doesn't waste much time. He says, look, why am I going to bother renting rooms on cargo ships? I've got the cash now. I'm going to construct my own fleet of new steamships to stay ahead of the game. That's why I always think of this guy as kind of, he becomes a combination of Citizen Kane and Rick Steves in a non-drinking way, because he never betrayed his values to the point where he started tippling as well. But the thing is, he also had a lot of personal connections and nepotism helped him out too. The British Empire was expanding up the Nile and he was pretty tight with the armed forces, particularly when they occupied Egypt in the early 1880s. And then he did favors for them. His son, John, was mainly running the Thomas Cook Company by this time. And John was given the job of transporting hundreds of British troops upriver in his steamship to try to control Sudan. And according to Humphreys, this is the only occasion on which the British Army has gone to war conveyed by private transport. So this is a lot of positive press. This also means that, weirdly enough, later on in life, veterans and officers might take a Thomas Cook tour out of nostalgia. Business is booming. So he's gone from, just to recap this, he's gone from walking on foot, talking about how he shouldn't drink, to organizing temperance rallies using railroad and telegraph, to taking people on tours via boats, to renting steamships, to building his own steamships, to helping fight a war, to now building his own city. He didn't really build Luxor, but he definitely set it on the path it's on today.
Yeah, there was a little cluster of homes in a sandy area surrounded by some little temples. And he saw this and saw opportunity. He thought it was situated neatly near some of the ruins of Karnak that were a popular tourist destination. So he figured, what the hell? And he dubbed this little region Luxor. He built a boardwalk, or it was referred to as a corniche. I'm not familiar with that term. I like it, though. It sounds like a tiny pickle. That's a Cornish haunt. Or, I don't, never mind. And he populated. Cornish hens. Exactly. Yeah, Cornish game hens are also delicious. Yeah. This is fancy food, you know, tiny pickles and game hens. You got to have a fancy name for something that's more basic. So no, Boardwalk will not do. It's got to be a Corniche. But he, you know, he parked a lot of his steamships there. They were allowed to unload their cargo. He had a few hotels built, one of which is still standing today, the Winter Palace, which sounds like something that you'd hear, you'd see. This is like almost like a mini Atlantic City kind of vibe. You know, it really is like a city that's designed for tourism. You know, it's like there's people aren't like local. There. It's designed for these out-of-towners.
It's because they're vacationing during the winter season in Europe. So now it's that's why they call it the Winter Palace. And a Corniche is like a road along the coast or a road cut into a cliff. I personally prefer the hens and the pickles, but yeah, it's a road. It's great. You're right. He made a boardwalk, kind of. He made like the ancestor of the boardwalk in what's the other one? Coney Island, for instance, would be an example on par with Atlantic City. He is building this into an empire. It's already an empire at this point. They lean into the tourism aspect. It's where you want to be and be seen if you are a European tourist of note. This is where the discovery of King Tut's tomb is announced, right? When they're opening this, they announce it in the Winter Palace. Sometimes people will stay on the boats. Sometimes they'll stay on the riverbank in tents. Sometimes they'll even stay inside the ancient tombs. Because just like the cruise companies that would later emulate them, there are tiers in pricing. There are options. You know what I mean? You want a room with a window? It's going to cost you a little.
Snagajob is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on the incredible true story, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare reveals the gripping tale of the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Get tickets now for this action comedy masterpiece that defies expectations, showcasing how one daring mission reshaped history and set the stage for modern black ops warfare using unconventional and utterly ungentlemanly techniques.
Starring Henry Cavill, known for his iconic portrayal of Superman, and Alan Ritchson, star of Reacher. Get ready for a mission with a little madness and a lot of mayhem.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R, and in theaters April 19th, get tickets now. This episode is brought to you by eBay Motors. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Noel, do you remember your favorite car?
Well, yeah. It was an Eddie Bauer edition Ford Explorer.
Oh, that's and cool.
I just remember it was my dad's. I was a hand-me-down car kind of kid. Dad would buy a new car. I'd get that car. And I just remember feeling so awesome being up above everybody, like I was in Mad Max or something.
I had a lot of land yachts that I loved. I had Pontiac Bonnevilles.
El Camino, right?
Oh, I never had an El Camino. My dad had one. And that was a real interesting use of our collective time, keeping that thing running. But I think these cars all kind of speak to us because they were such a fundamental part of our lives. Do you remember when I had that Monte Carlo?
That's what I meant. I said El Camino and I meant Monte Carlo.
I miss it. So the Monte Carlo was tough. I had a series of Monte Carlos, and the last one, God bless it, I had to learn a lot about car maintenance just to keep that guy running.
Totally.
But it still was like a perfect fit. It's almost like finding your true love. You know, like when you recently got a car a few years back now.
Oh, man. And funny you should say that. That particular perfect fit was the Honda Fit, which I love dearly. But, Ben, it's getting a little long in the tooth. And while it's been incredibly reliable up to now, it's getting to that age where I might have to start looking for some parts here and there to keep it running.
Mm-hmm. And that's where eBay Motors comes in. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly.
Brake kits, LED headlights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back.
Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
So keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com.
Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Extra.
Yeah, from the very start, he was doing these package deals, you know, and it was all right. Kind of tiered package deals. All inclusive, but not inclusive of all, if you know what I'm saying, right?
His Rick Steveishness takes him to the heights of business success. He passes away in 1892. Like I said, his son John had been running the business for a while. But the business doesn't end with him. It continues on. The family survives and the business survives through World War I. A lot of their boats get used as troop transports. His grandsons ultimately sell the Thomas Cook business in 1929 at the edge of the Great Depression, right before the world's economic collapse would cripple the tourism industry. And throughout the 30s and the 40s, the tourism scene in Egypt particularly crumbles. For a while, those fancy Cook boats are just floating hostels, basically, for archaeologists. But maybe we can talk a little bit about Thomas Cook's tours. The business is still around. Maybe we can talk about Luxor. Do you guys ever read Wiki Travel? Do you read Wiki Travel, Noel?
I'm sure it's come up in my Googlings, but it doesn't ring a bell directly. There's a wiki version about anything. Why shouldn't there be one for travel?
Yeah. It's a fun way to learn about a place you've never visited. It's also a fun way just to check the accuracy of any of these Wiki Travel articles. But I was looking up Luxor and Wiki Travel. Wiki Travel is designed entirely, like, it's a crowdsourced thing for any prospective traveler, and it's meant to be written by people who have firsthand experience. Sometimes also you can tell when it's written by people who live there and work in the tourism industry, you know, where they'll say stuff like, Belarus is not as dangerous as the media would have you believe. We have 100% American style pizza, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I would love.
What is American style pizza? Isn't pizza Italian? What is American?
I know.
Isn't that crappy pizza? You don't want American style. You want Sicilian style.
Yeah, that's why that comment sticks in my memory. But you can see it laid out as like, stay safe, where to sleep, what to eat, how to get in, how to get out, the language, the culture. It's a great read. And it's amazing that this guy entirely stumbled into what is now, even after surviving COVID, it's now still a billion-dollar industry, right? Egyptian tourism is, you know, kind of at an ebb. It hasn't returned to the days of Egyptomania, but the Thomas Cook Group is still around. I didn't know this. They're an airline. What do you think Thomas Cook would feel like if he saw that?
I'm sure he'd be stoked. He seemed like he was a relatively forward-thinking guy, but surely it's like a tiny little bespoke airline that only does little puddle jumper type flights, right? I've never heard of it.
82 destinations.
It's a lot. Huh.
They're all in New Jersey. No, I'm just kidding.
But they are a publicly listed airline, like you said, sort of a mini airline. I mean, that's impressive for an airline that I literally had never heard of until researching for this story. But also, they continue to operate tours. And we mentioned that because of some of the political and social uprising in Egypt, not nearly as popular a tourist destination. And that's a relatively recent development. In 2011, the Thomas Cook Group halted flights to Luxor, which is still relatively, you know, serves the same purpose as it did from the start in 2011 when that revolution kicked off. But today, you've got about 100 of the, remember those cruise liners that were there moored along the riverbanks in Luxor? Well, today we've got about 300 of them just kind of gathering dust and sand, waiting for a resurgence in the tourist industry there in Egypt, which may or may not come. I hope it does. I'd love to go, but it's certainly not like top of my list. And I don't think it's nearly the same. You know. I mean, I always forget how closely situated Europe is to Africa, but you always hear about Europeans going to Morocco, which I think is a little more stable and a little more seen as the kind of luxurious tourist destination than maybe at one point Egypt was, but no longer.
Yeah, I'm going to Morocco, actually, depending. Ooh. I just keep waiting on COVID. Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I wanna eat some food in a tagine, you know. But we do want to give you a quick contemporary update because William Faulkner was correct when he said the past isn't past. History is still with us. The Thomas Cook Company declared bankruptcy in 2019. It was 178 years old when it collapsed, and along the way, it made a lot of history. Also want to give a shout out to Christopher Rose from 15 Minute History, who has a great story about the curious case of the Thomas Cook Hospital in Luxor. So that's a story for another day, but we do hope you enjoy it. We hope you enjoyed this. I don't know. Where's your dream travel, man?
Oh man, I mean, I'm down. I'm definitely down with Morocco. When I went to Paris not too terribly long ago, the folks sitting next to me on one of the flights were talking about going to Morocco after hanging out in Paris for a while. So it's just a little bit of a hop and a jump. I do want to add though, because I've really been interested in recent months in the idea of train spotting. You know, there's a movie, of course, about heroin addicts in Scotland with Ewan McGregor. Really excellent Danny Boyle movie. It's sort of what the movie's about. They don't really do too much of it. It's sort of one of those absurdist kind of titles that really doesn't have much bearing on the actual plot. But there is this dude on TikTok and Instagram who I love. He goes by the name, it's like Thomas Bourgeoisie or something Bourgeoisie, and he is a train spotter, and he just gets such joy out of watching these trains. He knows all about the different models and the different engines, and he describes the different stations, and it's a huge deal, you know, in the UK and Europe. And he is probably very familiar with something called the Thomas Cook European Rail Timetable, which is often referred to as the Rail Bible, which has schedules for 50,000 train, bus, and ferry connections to around 5,000 locations. It stopped publishing in 2013 because of issues within the company, of course, corporate downsizing and the like, after being published for 140 years. So I guarantee this is something that train spotters would be super familiar with. But John Potter, who used to work for the Thomas Cook editorial team, because they branched out. They did these travel guides, you know, all kinds of stuff. I mean, this guy really did create a legacy of tourism, and they capitalized on it for many years. This guy, John Potter, actually put out a second mortgage on his house to buy the rights to that information, which was proprietary. It was that he bought the rights to the timetable and this proprietary software that was used to gather it all up. And now he personally publishes a new edition of this information that you can get from his website. So if you're interested in that at all, check out europeantimetable.eu, where you can get all kinds of European train travel guides and timetables and all of that stuff.
And this comes from a great little Mental Floss article. Although I disagree with the title, 11 Men with Extremely Boring Hobbies, you can find that online today and learn more about it. And if you'd like a bit of subterfuge and mystery at the very end of today's show, if you want to travel the rails in a very different way, you're going to want something in the U.S. called The Crew Change Guide. It's a book that's beyond banned. It's a secret book for a secret group of people. If you want to learn more about that, feel free to write to me on the internet. You can find me on Twitter, where I'm at Ben Bolin, HSW. You can find me on Instagram, where I'm at Ben Bolin, B-O-W-L-I-N. And Noel, You're on Instagram too, right?
That's right. I'm on Instagram at HowNowNoelBrown. You can check out my adventures and dipping my toe in the world of train spotting there. I'm just kidding. But maybe one day. Could be a cool hobby. Francis Bourgeoisie, by the way, is his name. Check out that guy. He's a delight. He wears this dorky, like, head-worn camera when the trains come by. And it's one of those ones that, like, makes your head look really big on top of a tiny body, and it makes his eyes look really big and wide apart and far apart. I think he does it for effect, but he's gotten really, really popular. He's, like, friends with Harry Styles and Rosalia and all these, like, big UK pop stars, and they just love him. And he just embraced the nerd in him that he was there all along. And then during COVID, he really decided to make a thing of this. That was something that he was bullied about during school. But Francis Bourgeoisie. Max Williams, where can folks find your internet likeness, sir?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter. I stay off the Instagram so I can avoid my nemesis, Mr. Noel Brown.
Fair.
But you can find me at @ATL_MaxWilliams, where, you know, you just see me posting about, you know, sports, Star Trek, trolling Ben Bullen.
Spores? All I didn't know you were into spores.
Oh, yeah, spores.
Yeah, totally, he's spores, a mycologist. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and thank you, of course, the one and only super producer, Max Williams. Thanks to Casey Pegram. Thanks to Eves Jeffcoat. Thanks to Jonathan Strickland, our own armchair Egyptologist. I feel like Jonathan listens to these, and that's gonna stick with him for a while. So, Jonathan, wake up. If you woke up at 3 and you heard that, just stay awake, man. That's it for us today. Tune in soon when we are going to talk about a really classy apology. And maybe not, I don't think that spoils too much at all, but it's a really classy, weird apology.
One of the classiest. We'll see you next time, folks.
For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
This episode is brought to you by the movie The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, only in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
It's directed by Guy Ritchie, who did The Gentlemen, and produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, who did Top Gun Maverick.
Based on a true story, this action comedy reveals the first ever Special Forces mission executed during World War II.
Starring Henry Cavill and Alan Ritchson, discover how one mission changed history, laying the foundation for modern Black Ops warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare is rated R and in theaters April 19th. Get tickets now.
Diamonds Direct Spring Sale starts this weekend. Get 20% off rings, earrings, pendants, bracelets, and more. It's the best store-wide sale of the season. Plus, book an appointment and get an additional $100 off. That's 20% off plus $100 off store-wide. And enjoy an expanded selection of the latest styles with designer appearances each weekend. Tons of engagement rings on sale, too. 20% off starts Friday and opens Sundays. Details at DiamondsDirect.com.
This episode of Ridiculous History is brought to you by Avalon Waterways. Ben, are you in major need of a vacation right now?
Noel, you're a mind reader. I am, and aren't we all?
We are. While cruising remains popular, there's something big happening in the industry, and that is, my friend, smaller ships.
True story. The intimate ships of Avalon Waterways can go where the big ships can only dream, through winding passageways of rolling vineyards and castled hills into the heart of timeless cities and storybook villages.
That sounds like a delight. See how Avalon's smaller ships promise greater discoveries, fewer people, and more of everything.
Limited time special offers await at avalonwaterways.com.